Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a loaded Monday live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and SF1. And 1 hour from right now, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, Colin Wright, Colin Wrong, plenty of both. It is great to have you in. Joy on another eventful voyage around North America this weekend. She is back after a trip in Vegas, I'm sure. Did you gamble at all?
I didn't gamble a lot, but I did not win. So
great food, great food city.
Yep, we went to SDK, which is always great. Very consistent.
Yes.
In the Cosmo, and it was a great time.
You ever been to the Catch?
To Catch?
Catch.
Yes.
The Catch.
The Catch. I haven't been to Catch in Vegas. I've been to Catch in L.A., though.
I love Catch.
Yes, it's a great restaurant.
That's fun. All right, let's start with this. There's been this feeling in the NBA with a lot of fans, and it's a real thing, that the only way to get a dynasty in this league or even win a championship is to attract superstars to your glamorous city. Miami's done it multiple times. Lakers have done it multiple times. And it leaves a lot of people in the NBA feeling left out. Well, the Dallas Mavericks, and that's a big city too, and it's got some glamour, but they did it another way. They drafted Dirk Nowitzki from overseas, developed him, and then eventually surrounded him for 1 year with all the right pieces, and they won a title, proving you can do it that way too. But that felt like sort of a one-off, right? And then there's Milwaukee. And they're doing it the Dallas way, too. Find Giannis, be patient, loyal, develop, get the right coach, and add some pieces, B-plus pieces that anybody could get. You know, Portland could get a P.J. Tucker. Memphis could get a Drew Holiday, Bobby Portis. The difference with Milwaukee, though, is this the new dynasty? And I know it sounds crazy, but to be a dynasty, you have to get to the finals every year. Look at the East this morning. Boston feels like they're in a rebuild, right? Philadelphia, you saw the stories last week. They're breaking up the band. Simmons and Embiid will be no longer. Miami, lightning in a bottle last year, not really close. Here you have Giannis, a defensive player of the year, a two-time MVP, and probably finals MVP by tomorrow night. And that's just entering the last 3 years into the data bank. And unlike old LeBron, Giannis is not brand-obsessed. Like old brittle KD, he's not a wanderer, nor is he bothered by social media or media criticism. Unlike increasingly old and increasingly brittle Kyrie, he's not strange. Young and healthy Giannis, let's play word association. Humble, grateful, healthy, loyal, focused. Is this the new dynasty? Is this the new face of the league? It would be a very different kind of superstar. Not brand obsessed. Not a wanderer, healthy every night, discourages ego. By the way, you can do it both ways, and I watch both ways. Been watching the NBA for 40 years. I love my Sonics back in the 70s. They were more like Milwaukee. And I love the Heatles. I love the Warriors. The Brooklyn Nets give us lots of content. But the Milwaukee way for most of this league is more relatable. Most cities aren't cool. Most fans aren't either, and they know it. Say what you will about LeBron James, but the NBA has lost over 50% of its ratings. I'm not one of them, but many of you are over the last 3 years. 50%. And in fact, when you dig deeper into the data, it indicates that local TV ratings are very strong in markets where teams draft and develop the players. There's a sense we're all in this together. We'll support you, Giannis, when you're not great. We're with you, Giannis, when you are. We're with you, Giannis, when you disappoint us the last 2 years, and we celebrate together by tomorrow night. Lakers ratings with LeBron and AD, Brooklyn's with KD, Harden, and Kyrie were in the dumper. Look it up. The Jazz weren't. The Bucks weren't. The Spurs weren't. The Warriors weren't. Maybe Giannis is exactly what the league needs. Maybe Milwaukee is what the league needs. And I am not anti-mobility. You've listened to me for years, many of you. I am pro-mobility in my own life. I celebrate LeBron going to Miami, back to Cleveland and L.A. But for a lot of fans, there's a disconnect. Not talking about brand, not mentally a wanderer, a little more loyal, discourages ego. Giannis had an interesting quote this past weekend, and I felt that it resonated with a lot of fans.
I figured out like a mindset to have that, like, when you focus on the past, that's your ego. I did this. We were able to beat this team 4-0. I did this in the past. I won that in the past. Mm-hmm. And when I focus on the future, it's my pride. Like, yeah, next game 5. I do this and this and this. Right. You know, I'm going dominant. That's your pride target. Like, it doesn't happen. Like, you're right here. And I kind of, like, try to focus in the, you know, in the moment, in the present. And that's humility. That's being humble.
That could work, too. Maybe that's time to run the league. Maybe this face and this personality, grateful and humble, there's room for that, too. Interesting stuff. I want to shift to free throws. I picked Phoenix to win the series. And one of the reasons I picked Phoenix to win the series was free throws. I said, I think these two teams are going to be in close games. Phoenix is one of the best free throw shooting teams in the league. In Milwaukee, Giannis can't hit them. And that was one of the things I said last week. Like, these games are going to be 4- and 5-point games. I mean, even the other night, we felt Milwaukee kind of dominated it. Look at the final score. It's 4- or 5-point games. Tomorrow night, it's a 4- or 5-point spread. They're close games. So I said, Phoenix hits free throws. Milwaukee star Giannis can't. And then Nick Wright, you know him. Nick Wright said something yesterday to me last night in a podcast. It was one of those. Nick said, free throws are overrated. What? Come on, that's outrageous. You should be suspended for that. I think he's right. The Lakers dynasty was built on Shaq. He couldn't hit free throws. The Spurs dynasty was built on Duncan. Nor could he. LeBron's number one liability the last 15 years, the free throw line. Sometimes he dreads it. And Giannis looks like he'll be the finals MVP. Dominating bigs get to the free throw line so often, increasingly in a very finesse league, that is efficiency the most important thing? Is it okay for Giannis to go 10 for 20 if DeAndre Ayton's only going 6 for 6? Giannis has 66 free throws in this series. He's made 39. Second is Devin Booker with 29. DeAndre Ayton's third with 17. Yes, Chris Paul's an unbelievable free throw shooter. But the Suns rely on jump shots and don't get to the line. They didn't all season. And Chris Paul is worn out by the physicality of Drew Holiday. He's not getting there either. That Giannis is so physical and so aggressive that he initiates so much contact. He just gets to the free throw line so often. So that if he shoots 58%, he's still hitting 12 to 13 a night out of 23. It trumps everybody else's 5 for 6 and 6 for 7. Nobody thinks McDonald's has the best burgers, but they make the most money on volume. It's the Walmart, the Target, the Costco strategy. We sell everything. Buy it from your bananas to your blouses to your shoes to your kayaks to your detergent. We sell everything. they don't maybe have your favorite detergent. It's not that perfect kayak or perfect pair of socks, but you can go there and you get everything. Everything about analytics is efficiency. That's what analytics are in baseball and football, a smarter way to do things. That's what technology largely is. We can do everything in our phone now, don't always have to get into our car. We can DoorDash it and comes to our house. It's just easier and more efficient, and I don't have to go to the store. And I'm for efficiency too. But sometimes it just gets trumped by volume. Bigger, stronger, more sometimes trumps efficiency. Milwaukee's a bigger, older, stronger team. Giannis is simply longer, stronger, and more aggressive, and he doesn't shoot 80% at the free throw line, but he has lived there through the finals, and that has trumped his efficiency. They should win this title, and I believe they will tomorrow night. Props to Nick Wright, who blew my mind with that. What's really interesting is, one of the things I like about the conclusion to a season is that we are all, myself included, sort of prisoners of the moment. You know, every game feels like this is the way the series will be. But I went back and I looked at every series with Phoenix and Milwaukee, and this is really becoming what the previous six series for these two teams were. Maybe we shouldn't have been. I shouldn't have been surprised. 1 hour from now, Colin Wright, Colin Wrong.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
When a season comes to its conclusion, you look back and think, I should have seen it. Should have seen it coming. So I've liked, bizarrely, joy is my witness, I picked Milwaukee to win it all. And the two reasons I picked Milwaukee to win it all months ago was we've dismissed them. There'll be no pressure. I believe that. And their players, look at their roster, don't get hurt. In a condensed season, everybody was falling apart. So this morning I could say, told you so. But I did pick Phoenix to win this series. And it's really interesting as I watch this come to a conclusion, and I do think Milwaukee wins convincingly tomorrow night. I think they're just leaning on Phoenix, and Phoenix is a small basketball team that looks tired and shot. But go back to every Suns series. They went up on the Lakers 1-0. They went up on Denver 4-0. They swept them. They went up on the Clippers 2-0, and they went up on the Bucks 2-0. Interesting, all four series. Look at the last three series for the Bucks. They fell behind to Brooklyn 0-2. They fell behind, remember, Trae Young, big night, 0-1 to Atlanta. They fell behind to Phoenix 0-2. And it looks like they're going to win all of them. Now, why would that be? Well, Phoenix, very young, very athletic, very up-tempo, very fast, jumps on you. It takes a game to sort of recalibrate. They also tend to play at home. They played at home in all those games. They're great at home. And they came into every series the more rested team. In a condensed season, that matters. How about the Bucks? Well, the Bucks are an old team. They're a veteran team. They're a team built on size and power and strength. It doesn't blow you away. But over the course of a series, Atlanta, Brooklyn, the Suns, we've seen the same thing. They just dominate you on the glass. They beat you up physically. And when you look at this series, Chris Paul looks every day of 36 years old. DeAndre Ayton is just exhausted. He feels like he's on an island fighting off all their bigs. Brooke Lopez and Bobby Portis and Giannis. And Devin Booker is just trying to save everybody and trying to score 45 a night. Are the Suns essentially the Miami Heat of last year? One star, Jimmy Butler, Chris Paul, surrounded by a bunch of really talented young guys, playing with a ton of energy. They jump on leads with teams, up-tempo, a lot of jumpers, rely on them. And then in the end, the Lakers, who had size and LeBron and Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee and Anthony Davis, lean on the kids. The adults lean on the kids and wear them out, because that's what I'm seeing now. What we know about the NBA, the grown-ups beat the kids, even when the kids take a series lead and even when the kids are really talented. I mean, you go look right now at the size of Milwaukee. They are per player 2 inches taller and 25 pounds heavier per player on average. That's what the Lakers were last year against Miami. By the way, the previous year, Toronto, Serge Ibaka, Mark Eaton, Pascal Siakam, Kawhi Leonard, big physical, Mark Gasol, big, powerful, physical teams. Don't necessarily shoot the three great, leaning on a finals opponent over the course of 4 games and 5 games and 6 games. The adults, the bigger, stronger, older adults, wear out the kids. Mark Gasol, Pascal Siakam, Serge Ibaka, Kawhi Leonard. They did it to the NBA 3 years ago in Toronto. Lakers did it last year. Bucks are doing it this year. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
It's almost as if history basketball is a contact sport.
Well, you know, it's funny. So Giannis came into this league really skinny. I mean, you go back and look at the YouTube videos early on.
Yeah, he was very young.
He is now, whereas KD's body is the same as it was 5 years ago. You look at Giannis's body, he is so ripped. I mean, DeAndre Ayton's a big man. That's 6'11", 260. He's a crouton in the salad bowl of Giannis's life. He is tossing him all over the floor. Giannis is so strong. And everything he does, he leans in. So Phoenix,
He plays downhill. He plays a little like LeBron when LeBron was relying a lot on his physicality.
Yep.
Yeah.
Initiates contact every time down the floor.
Yep. So a report surfaced last week that Damian Lillard was planning to request a trade from the Blazers. He then was speaking to the media later that day. This happened on Friday. Predictably, he did not confirm that he was going to request a trade as Team USA heads into the Olympics, but right. He did speak on it, and he acknowledged the team needs to make some changes to be contenders.
Number one is not true. And secondly, I'll also say that I haven't made any firm decision on, you know, what my future will be. We've reached that point where it's like, okay, but it's not enough. Do we actually want to win it all? Is that what we're shooting for? And we got to do things to show that, you know, we got to, you know, put action behind that.
So, I mean, we're talking about the Bucks, obviously, who have built things the right way, right? Now, they did make some changes this offseason. Two guys that have contributed mightily throughout the playoffs, which are PJ Tucker and Drew Holiday, and who are stars in their own right. They're not right. Giannis or KD or Dame, but they are what thought was has been the difference maker truly for this team. So, you know, the Bucks build it the right way, similar to how Portland has built it. But what is the thing that's going to take you over the edge? What are the changes that you need to make to get yourself into the NBA Finals and win a championship? And putting the right pieces around Dame are important. I don't necessarily know they need a third star.
Well, to me, their bigs are good enough and Dame's great. For the last 3 years, they've had a player named CJ McCollum who is a 23-point-a-game guy. Portland, people think I'm out of my mind. I would call the Clippers. I think Dame and it just seems to me either blow it up and start over, call Golden State and take their lottery picks. You can go to Philadelphia and get all their length and Ben Simmons and Thibault, or you can go to the Clippers and try to make a deal for Paul George.
I don't think the Clippers are taking that call right now because Kawhi Leonard is out for
till the All-Star break.
Yeah. I mean he has an ACL surgery that takes a long time to come back.
Portland to me is in quicksand. What can they do if they keep Dame? What can they do to become a championship team? I don't see the path. I don't see the players.
I don't either. And Dame is very aware of what his future needs to be if he wants to cement himself on the next level, like as with a championship. Obviously, he has everything else he needs. He has the respect. He has the numbers.
Yeah.
He has the money. But that part of your legacy is important if you're a player as good as Damian Lillard. Now, he was very non-committal either way. He did deny it in this case, which of course he's going to do.
Yes.
Not saying that he is lying, obviously. I don't think he has made a decision yet.
Right.
I think he's focusing on the Olympics. And he wasn't going to take away all of the shine from Team USA by talking about a trade.
Right.
Nor does he want to deal with that right now. Like, he's playing in the Olympics. There's no need to do it right now. But I'm with you. I don't know what you can do. I mean, they've made the playoffs for the last 8 seasons, and they've been eliminated in the first round 4 of the last 5 years.
NBA quicksand. Terrible, you get lottery picks. You find your great player, or you're really good in a championship team. The worst place to be in is drafting like 13 to 16 to 18, and Portland's always in that space where they're good, not terrible, not great. And I don't know what if you look at that roster, you can trade C.J. McCollum. Now, by the way, maybe it's Philadelphia. You get Ben Simmons and give me somebody who can shoot, and maybe that's it. Dame, Ben Simmons, and another piece from Philadelphia. But I think Philadelphia wants more than C.J. McCollum, although I would add Embiid, C.J. McCollum, Tobias Harris, Seth Curry. That could win the East.
I mean, but can you win a championship?
I'm not
and
sure.
That's what Dame is trying to do. So Kevin Durant doesn't shy away from criticism on social media. On Friday, he joined a chat on Twitter Spaces, and the conversation turned to his time with the Warriors. And he pushed back at the notion that he is jealous of the love his teammates got when he was with the Warriors. He said, "Show me any indication of me ever being pissed off about not getting a love in the arena, ever. Have you ever seen that from me, or did you hear that through a bunch of narratives being created? Like, I hate my teammates, or I'm jealous. I saw my jersey all around that arena. Everywhere I went in the Bay Area, people showed me love. I never talked about that. So where did that come from?" He also pointed to Ethan Strauss's book as one of the reasons that the narrative exists, and he is frustrated that fans believe Strauss over him.
Well, anytime you leave a great family, there's going to be questions about why did you leave a great family? So when you leave Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond and Steve Kerr, the obvious question is,
why?
Why would you do that? So this is one of these where I don't have a problem with what KD's saying, but I don't think Ethan Strauss, who I know well, is writing a book on just rumors, and he's getting sourced. I've been told by people close to the Warriors that I trust that there was a lot of, you had to dance around. Remember that during the parade, there was that quote from Bob Myers. He took the microphone and we all went, oh.
It was an unfortunate quote.
It was that, yeah. But by the way, it wouldn't be if you were just, I mean, if you did that and joked about DeAndre Ayton in Phoenix, everybody knows he's going to be there forever.
Yeah, but KD is not DeAndre Ayton. And that's no disrespect to DeAndre Ayton, but KD is on another level.
Like, that's right.
You have to treat guys like that, who, by the way, came to your team and helped you win 2 championships. You got to treat them a little differently. You can't make jokes, and you have to know who you can joke with. Like, we all know people you don't joke with,
right?
And that's just fine. Like, that's how they are wired.
Right.
And some people you can joke with, and that's fine. I think for KD, and look, I don't know KD personally, but if you're talking about why do people think it's strange that you left Steph and the Warriors and that dynasty, I think KD apparently, like, if you look at his career, he likes change. Like, he likes new challenges.
Yeah.
And Brooklyn is a new challenge. You can't say that he went there to get away from the super team narrative, because now they have Harden and Kyrie.
Right.
So it's like it's a new super team. So I think he just likes new challenges. I don't think he had a problem with them getting love. They won those championships because he was there. Like, the foundation was there, obviously, but he put them over the edge to win those championships. So we're 1 week away from finding out if Aaron Rodgers is going to show up at training camp. Training camp is just a week away. Isn't that crazy?
That's great.
So tight end Mercedes Lewis, friend of the show, is optimistic about his quarterback being there. He said, "I hope so. I hope to see my guy there. I think so. So we'll see what happens."
Seriously, that's where we are.
Yes. Yeah, I thought that was a very accurate assessment of what's going on with Aaron Rodgers right now. If he skips training camp, which I don't anticipate he's going to do, because why? If you're going to play this year, why would you skip training camp?
Well, the Packers have to fine him if he misses.
Yes, it's not up to them. So he would lose $2 million, a little over $2 million, if he skips training camp. But I don't know what the value to the team is of him not being there. Like, if he's going to play this year, you might as well try and win. You have to be there.
I think he's going to be at training camp, but I'll be honest with you. I follow Twitter enough to see what the people are saying, and I think that's valuable for us. Like, what are the people saying? And people are saying, this Aaron Rodgers story, it's a lot about nothing. He's the MVP of the league. He has, according to the Peter Kings and the Adam Schefter, is not happy. He resents the Packers, and apparently they resent him. It's not nothing here. Now, I think he's going to return like you, but in a week, what if he doesn't? You can't tell me this is not a story. It's a gigantic story.
When we have been talking, listen, we are not, Colin and I are not the ones making this up. Like, we are talking about this because other people, multiple people, lots of people are talking about it. It is obviously a thing.
If Steph Curry, the equivalent of Aaron Rodgers, popular, huge, iconic, and we thought he would not, he was struggling with the Warriors front office and ownership and may not return, we would spend every show on it. So the idea this isn't a story, it's Aaron Rodgers. It's the Packers. He's a quarterback in the National Football League.
And even if he does show up at training camp, I still think it's a story because I believe this is just him at this point setting the groundwork for not being there next year. So whether he's at training camp or not doesn't mean that this isn't all still a very valid situation.
Yeah. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Well, Chris Broussard, this finals has surprised me, but it looks like Phoenix looks fatigued and small, and Chris Broussard brought Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing, joining us now. You know, it's funny, Chris, for a long time, the NBA, sometimes medium-sized markets and smaller markets feel like you got to have a glamorous city, you got to be Miami and the Lakers, and that's where stars play. And then you got the Milwaukee thing where they were patient, they developed him, they added reasonable pieces, pieces anybody could get, Drew Holiday, a Bobby Portis. These aren't glamour players. And then I watch them and I look at the East and I say to myself, is this the next dynasty? Homegrown, humble. By the way, I like all the Heatles. I like all the Lakers. I like the egos. I like all the wandering. I like all the mobility. You start looking at the East, Chris. You start looking around this league. If they win that tomorrow night, it doesn't necessarily feel like a one and done, does it?
No, it certainly doesn't. Now, they wouldn't be guaranteed to win the East. It wouldn't be like the Bulls with Michael Jordan or the three-peat Lakers or even the Heatles, as you mentioned, who we knew were clearly the best team in the East year after year. Because Brooklyn, the only question with Brooklyn is, will they be healthy? Right. And then Kyrie, where will his mind be at? That's it. I think most people, you put the two teams side by side, are going to pick Brooklyn. So there's that. We'll see what happens in Philadelphia. But I think Brooklyn and Milwaukee will be the two teams in the East fighting it out. Here's what I do like about the Bucks and why they do have a chance to continue to win going forward. Giannis, in my view, Colin, is improving before our very eyes. All right, we're no longer, think about it, we're not focused anymore on he can't shoot. He's missing all these threes. He's missing all these mid-range jump shots because he's playing inside more. Not, he's not posting up, but he is doing his damage in the paint more than ever. And when he's on the perimeter, he's making the right decisions. Like he is making some great passes to his teammates, whether it's for layups underneath the basket or three-pointers in the corner or whatever it may be. And I think Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton, he's kind of leaving the perimeter scoring to them. So if Giannis continues to play this way and then over time continues to improve his jump shot, they can be very tough, you know, in the future. So there's a chance there that they could continue to win championships, well, if they win this one.
It's really interesting. When Michael Jordan dominated the league, there were just physically things Michael could do. There were shots he made that are still iconic. When LeBron dominated the league, when Shaq dominated the league, again, there was a physical dimension nobody else could do. You remember LeBron's first 6 or 7 years in the league. He was chasing guys down and guards and blocking shots. In the last two games, Giannis has made plays, Chris, I'm not sure another player in the league could do. That block of DeAndre Ayton, I can't think of it. I don't think Embiid is that quick. And I also think that alley-oop where Giannis is running down and beating guards down the floor. is that when you look at Giannis's physical development, you know, Nick Wright said it. He said, you know, free throws are kind of overrated with the Duncans and the Shaqs and LeBrons. When you can physically do stuff others can't, is Giannis the face of the league if he wins this title?
Well, Colin, he is certainly helping himself in these press conferences, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, what he's saying is great. I mean, you can't help but like the guy, you know, and then he's got the mental toughness that I think people are drawn to. I mean, the fact that he'll go to the free throw line and shoot an air ball or two, and then the next play he's driving again trying to get to the foul line.
Like, I know.
People react to that. The fact that, you know, a year ago or even entering these playoffs, we were down on him. Oh, he can't get it done in the playoffs. He's overcome that. So there's a human element that you just love about Giannis. And obviously, the nickname the Freak is appropriate because we have not seen anything like this. He's a 7-footer who doesn't post up like Shaq, but can't shoot like Kevin Durant or Dirk Nowitzki. So what is he? He's just an incredible athlete who can pass the ball, who can handle the ball, and he does all these things around the rim that are incredible. I believe this, Colin. As great as Giannis is, he's probably only 75% of what he could be.
Yeah.
Because when I put his work ethic and mental toughness together, I say, like, what if he becomes just an adequate mid-range shooter? And I don't necessarily want him like he used to be where he's handling the ball up the top of the key and bringing the ball up. But what if when he gets it on the wing 18 feet out, he's going to hit it most of the time?
Yeah.
And he can shoot the three adequately. Like, he would be unguardable. So I said years ago, and it felt, you know, there's a few guys that you can see and you would say, they could be in the GOAT conversation. Not that they will be the GOAT or whatever, but you can see the potential there.
Yeah.
There's the potential. I'm not saying he'll ever be that, but the potential is there for him to be in the conversation if he can keep winning.
You know, it's really fun.
And improving.
You know, it's when I watch him play, it's interesting, Chris. I think I talked about this last week. There's a little bit of footage of Lou Alcindor at UCLA as a freshman. And if you go back to Lou Alcindor in high school in New York or UCLA early, he ran the floor very well. People may have forgotten Sam Bowie at 7'4" actually ran the floor pretty darn well. And there's part of Giannis's game where, and I'm not saying he's going to be Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I'm not saying that. But there is a physical component to Kareem. He had the most unstoppable shot in league history, and he was all NBA defense, must have been 12, 13 times. Ironically, started his career in Milwaukee. And there is, when I watch him running the break and when I watch him down low, I mean, I remember as a kid, Kareem was just, there was no anecdote. There really wasn't. If Kareem was in the on a roll, he got you 36. And I think, and I may be crazy, you know, we always compared LeBron to Michael, even though Michael was more Kobe. And LeBron was more Magic.
Right.
If I said to you, give me three players who were Giannis, the first one that pops into my head is a young Lou Alcindor, a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. If I said three guys with Giannis, who is he? Who do you see?
Well, let me say this. There were guys. I mean, Wilt Chamberlain was a track star.
Yeah.
He could run the floor.
Yeah.
Shaq, you remember early in Shaq's career,
yes.
He'd do it kind of jokingly, but he could do it. Dribble the ball up court against the break, make a nice pass. But back then, it wasn't big men automatically played inside. Remember Ralph Sampson?
Yeah.
Who wanted to shoot jumpers from the elbow and everybody said, oh, he's soft. Look at him. Get inside and bang, big fella. Like, and so yes. Kareem told me a couple years ago, if he were playing today and coming up as a player, he said he would play like Giannis. And I believe he would because, as you said, Kareem had that athleticism.
Oh, yeah.
He had those skills. There's video footage. Remember, he played Dr. J 101. And Kareem was – he beat Dr. J pretty badly because he actually had athleticism and skills to go with his length. So I actually think that is a fair comparison. Kareem, just at that time, you weren't afforded the opportunity as a big to play on the perimeter and do all of those things. But I think it's a very appropriate comparison. And Giannis is kind of like the next, you know, version of Kareem. Yeah, look, Kareem won six, and he's got to, Giannis has to keep winning. But here's the interesting thing, Colin, and this is, you know, a lot of people criticizing Giannis, right, and right. saying, Chris Middleton's really the Batman, and Giannis doesn't close. Well, Kareem really wasn't the closer. I mean, I know you could always go to him for that sky hook.
Right.
And they did it in 1988 when they beat Detroit, right? But Kareem needed a guard to get him the ball. You know, he needed Oscar or he needed Magic. That's when he won his championships. So Giannis is not that different in that he does need another guy.
Yeah.
When you're a seven-footer and you don't shoot it that well, you're going to need somebody else. Shaq needed Wade or Kobe. You're going to need somebody else. So Giannis is not unique in that, yeah, he needs a great perimeter player to play along with him.
Great stuff. Chris Broussard, Fox Sports NBA analyst. Nice job. You ever notice Chris is the best-dressed guy on our network? It doesn't even matter. During season, off season, he's $1 million. Somebody get his tailor. Good seeing you, buddy.
Wow. Thank you, my man. Thank you.
You bet. Chris Broussard, I love him. All right, top of the hour, Colin Wright, Colin Wrong.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, you know, fans tend to always complain about officiating, especially in basketball. Suns fans are like, we can't get the whistle. Well, the Suns didn't get the whistle all year because they're a finesse team that relies on jump shots. They don't initiate a lot of contact. The Suns are very good at shooting free throws, but they didn't get to the free throw line all year long. They were like 25th or 28th or something in free throw attempts. Milwaukee is big and physical. They get to the free throw line. They don't always make them, but they initiate more contact. Giannis's game is leaning into you around the basket, initiating contact. But I understand why fans do complain about it, because so many of these championships in these sports feel arbitrary. And it, you know, it's random calls that could go either way. College football is the only sport right now where fans don't do a lot of complaining about officials in the biggest games, because Alabama just looks better than everybody, and no reasonable person can watch Alabama play 95% of their opponents and not see they're bigger, stronger, faster, with better coaching than all the other teams. What's there to argue about? Alabama's not dominating this sport for a decade because the officials are all from Tuscaloosa. There's not a lot to argue with them. Occasionally, by the end of the year, they'll face a Clemson that can knock them off, and even Clemson has to play great and beats them in the last second. So when you watch the Bucks and the Suns, it's very typical. Is that this series started, we thought it was all Phoenix. I liked them in six. A lot of people did. Even when they lost game three, I thought, yeah, that's what happens. The team trailing wins it. And then game four, I'm like, oh, and then game five, it's like, we got a different series. This series has been two different series, early all Phoenix, late all Milwaukee. I mean, think about the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, there was a lot of dynasty talk. Joey and I would kind of roll our eyes after they won their first Super Bowl. It's like, dynasty. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, the Patriots lasted 20 years. Let's slow down on this thing. You're going to have to pay Mahomes. So Kansas City's favored again this year. And that's considered like, the greatest potential for a dynasty in the NFL is Kansas City, right? They got maybe the best coach, the best quarterback, great owners, no chaos. I mean, they're in a division with kind of the dysfunctional Raiders, and the Broncos don't have a quarterback, and the Chargers are always talented, but they always crush our dreams. And the last two Super Bowls, Kansas City's been in. They got blown out in one, I mean, destroyed, and the other one they trailed by 10 in the fourth quarter. And San Francisco completes one pass over the top. They were this far away, and they're 0-2 in Super Bowls. Even Tampa this year, which looks fully loaded, right, the Buccaneers, they're not favored to win. Kansas City is again. You go back to the NBA. You think very rarely do teams separate. You think Shaq and Kobe separated, but Shaq and Kobe were dominant for 1 year. I mean, the first year of that thing, the Blazers took them 7 in the Western Conference Finals. I was there, and the Blazers led by 15 in the fourth. in L.A. at the Staples Center. I was there. Okay, and then the Warriors dynasty. Yeah, it was easy in year one. The next year, they trailed 3-2 to Houston until Chris Paul got hurt. You go to the Heatles. 4 years, they won two, one of them on a Ray Allen jumper, you know, at the buzzer. The easy year, they trailed the Celtics 3-2 in the Eastern Conference Finals. I understand why fans blame refs. These championships are inches, not feet apart.